accession number 17664, Reel 1.
Ray Elliott, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Yes, Raymond Elliott, I was born in St Ives, near Cambridge, 22nd of May, 1932.
Did you grow up and have your education in St Ives?
Yes, I did, and I was only very young when the war broke out, seven in fact, I think. And my eldest brother, he went to war. I remember asking him why he'd had to go, and his reply was, "So as you don't have to." Anyway, off he went. And the eldest brother, the second brother, he was a cripple. He'd been crippled all his life, and because he couldn't get in the army, so he wanted to do something and decided to, well, he got into the Home Guard. And I remember all his equipment in the hall and his gun and all his regalia, you know, what they had. They had everything the army had. And he often used to go on parade, and being a cripple, he managed, you know. And he used to paint the hangars at Witten Aerodrome, camouflage on the roof of the hangars. That's marvellous, really, when you think what he did. And then my sister, she joined the local fire service, and that left myself and my younger sister. Well, she's 3 years older than me, but we were the youngest, and of course we couldn't do anything. Well, then my mother decided that she wanted to take in evacuees, and through the course of the war we had hundreds. There was families, whole families who didn't want to be split up. There was young children of my own age. I mean, we always had somebody there. And at one time we had a German girl. She was a German Jew. She came. Oh, Fred Meadows. Oh, those were loads of them. And I remember really mostly the evacuees, because they're strangers in your house, you know, you befriend, and it's nice. And then we had a dugout at the bottom of the garden, the old RH shelter. We used to, when the siren went, we didn't used to sleep in there, only when the siren went. And we'd all troop off down the bottom of the garden and get into the RH shelter. You see the buzz bombs fly over with the old red flames coming out the back, you know, wondering if it's going to stop. And we used to spend the night in there then. We had one or two bangs and cracks. But nothing like London. I mean, it was relatively quiet where we were, because that's St Ives is only sort of 12 miles west of Cambridge, so it's in the country, really.
What was your address in the war?
That was 50 Little Farthing Close, St Ives, which was there was a Great Farthing and a Little Farthing Close, and that was quite a little community of houses, you know, that, very friendly and that. And that was it, really.
How did you get on with the evacuees? Were they always easy to get on with?
Not always. I remember once I was a little girl, and she had a nasty habit of repeating or saying your last word of a sentence before you could finish. You know, she seemed to know what you was going to say, and that used to bug me a little bit. So she was the only one, this little girl, Rosie Gorman, her name was, and that's the only one I used to argue with because of that, of being children, you know, these silly things. But apart from that, we used to get on very, very well.
Was she your age?
Yes, she was my age, yes. Yeah. I was only 7 and 8 years old, you see, and she knew that it used to get me going. But she was the only one. I used to get on very well with all the rest. We used to go out in the fields shooting and all sorts of things, tracking, birds nesting, because it was all new to them because they come from London, you see, and I was able to tell them no end of things about the country, so that was great.
What type of things did you tell them?
Well, about the bird's nests and what sort of eggs they were and what colour eggs to expect when you got it out of the nest and all this sort of thing. Because in those days, that wasn't taboo like it is now, and you used to have a collection of birds' eggs in a box and used to go rabbiting and snare the rabbits, you know, things like this, because that was good food to eat then, you see. And those sort of things. That was all alien to them, being in city boys, you see.
Did they seem to be different in any other ways?
Not really. They, as sometimes, used to be able to tell me things that I didn't know about, you know, but, in the city life and how they used to live there, you know, but not really. They, we used to get on very well.
What type of things caught your interest about city life?
Well, the busyness of it all, and buses and things, you see, and the shops. And I'd never been used to anything like that. I mean, I'd been used to a vegetable lorry coming around selling vegetables, you see, and but they used to have street corners, stools and things, and wheelbarrows, and the barrow boys, I used to get tales of those people, you know, and I'd never heard of them. I didn't know what they was talking about, really, but it was quite interesting. And
did the evacuees ever cause any nuisance for your parents?
Never did. No, they used to get on very well, because my mother used to look after them very well, and she was a very kind lady, and they liked being there, you know. Mm. But I don't quite know how she used to get in touch with these people. I think there was a lady in St Ives who used to organise it all. And she used to ask my mother if she could have some more, you know, and the whole family would turn up. Well, three people, the mum and dad and the little girl, or whatever. And somehow we used to shuffle around and find ourselves all in one bedroom sort of thing, you know, and manage all right. Yeah, that was...
How many rooms did your house have?
Well, it had three bedrooms. I only had three bedrooms, you see. And but there was two quite large rooms and one sort of medium size. And yeah, we used to manage that.
When you say that your mother had hundreds of evacuees during the war, do you mean that literally?
Well, when I said hundreds, I thought to myself, well, that might be exaggerated, but when you think about it, when the event evacuees she had throughout the war, coming and going, was a lot. It probably wasn't hundreds, but that was a lot. I mean, I can remember lots of people. I can't remember the names, but my sisters can. I had a word with them, and you know, they say the same as I do, that being that age, eight years old, I mean, I suppose things do seem exaggerated. But I wouldn't think it was literally 100, but that was a lot.
What was the name of the Jewish girl?
Emma Farmtrog. And I remember her. She was quite a big girl. And always sort of fussing over you, you know, always wanting to help. She'd been through a lot in Germany, she'd been through a lot. And I don't know how she got to this country, but my mother once told me that she'd been through a lot.
Did Emma tell you anything about what she'd been through in Germany?
No, she didn't. No, she never told me, but my mother once told me that she'd been through a lot. Yeah, and I quite believe she had, because she seemed to be overwhelmed with everything, you know.
In what way overwhelmed?
Well, she always used to appreciate everything, and help you. Yeah, I don't know if she's alive now. I don't suppose she is. Often wonder about that, whether these people are still alive. Long time ago.
And did the evacuee children all go to your school?
Yes. I don't know if they all did, but I can remember some of them did. Yeah. Jim Seeley and one or two of them, yeah. Yeah, they used to... They were all in the local community, yeah. It was only a small town. And only one school there. Some of them went to Huntingdon. But I can't remember too much about that, actually.
Did they fit in all right in the school?
Oh, yeah, they used to fit in all right, yeah. Yeah, there was one or two fights, you know, like children do. But my memories of the evacuees is good. Yeah, I must admit I didn't mind them. Except little Rosie, she used to bug me a little bit. But no, they were very good, actually.
Did any bombs actually fall in St Ives?
Yeah, I think the nearest skirmish we had was... because Witten was quite near Witten Aerodrome, which is an active air base. And they tried once or twice to get that. And there was a couple of bombs and things. Buzz bomb dropped near St Ives, a couple of miles away. You know, but they didn't find us. They didn't get too close. We used to hear the bangs, oh, the bumps. We were lucky in that respect. Yeah.
Was there anything for you in the war in the way of deprivation?
No. We used to manage very well. Yeah.
So you didn't go short of any foods that you wanted?
No, I remember I used to get forced down me this semolina and jam, which I used to hate, and I do to this day. But Mother said that's all there is, so this is what you got to have. But we did very well. She seemed to manage. I don't know how she did manage, actually.
You were telling me that your mother got some certificate from the...
Yes,
King.
Yes. From the, that was the, is it, was it Elizabeth?
Well, King George VI was reigning till 52.
Mm. Well, I can show it to you in a little while. I'll read it to you. And, that was in appreciation for all the evacuees that she had during the war, looking after families, and disrupting your household, and the whole family had to sort of accept the fact that these people were coming in and going, and that was in appreciation of that. And it's written out in by hand, but at the bottom in type is my mother's name, so it was a pre-written thing, printed thing, but it's quite a nice thing to keep. She was very proud of that. Mm.
Were there any celebrations in St Ives at the end of the war for VE Day or VJ?
Oh yeah, we had a street party VE Day, and up the close, and that was magnificent. That was really a smashing party. Everybody rallied round, and goodness knows where all the food come from, but it was everything. I can remember that to this day, as plain as anything. And we had a terrific street party. It was marvellous. And on VJ night, we had a huge bonfire. At the end of the close, there was a circle for vehicles to turn round, and that was absolutely full. And we had a magnificent bonfire there. Yeah, that was VJ night. Which was... never leaves you, that's in your memory. And
were there many foreign troops or even British forces in your area?
Well, we had prisoners of war. We had Italian prisoners of war, what we used to call the searchlight field, on the outskirts of the town. There was a field with a hill in it, a rise, where the searchlights were. And we had Italian prisoners in there. And they weren't locked up, they used to walk about freely. And I always remember that they used to make jewellery and bracelets out of anything. They would find wire, electric wire, all different colours, and they would twine these bracelets around, and they were magnificent. Really, really were. I bet if I could find one today, that'd be lovely. It'd be worth the money, I should think. But the rings they used to make from aluminium, from aircraft, and perspex, they used to polish it up, and it was brilliant. And for an ornament, a diamond, there are no diamonds or anything, but they used to use different colours, red and blue, I remember, and green. Whether it was a resin or what, I don't know, but it was really nice to look at, you know. I think that people used to buy these things off of them, you know. And they was really, really very clever at it. And they used to have a brown overall, brown suit on, boiler suit with a big yellow spot on the back. And so you could spot them a mile off, but they were lovely chaps. No arguments or anything occurred, as I can remember anyway. And us children used to go around and chat to them, and they were always pleased to see us, you know, always friendly. Used to get the harvest in, and used to help them with the harvest. In those days, we had the old thrashing machines. You remember those? And the rats used to run about. I don't recall any Germans there. But we certainly had Italian.
What type of things would the Italians say to you as children?
Well, they just treat you all right and offer you sweets. They used to be just the same as us, you know. And I used to be intrigued with what they used to make. And a car out of a tin, you know. And it was just fascinating me. That's mainly what I used to talk about with them, you know.
So they didn't used to talk to you about the war?
No, never spoke about the war or where they came from or what had happened to them or anything. Well, we was only children, really, weren't we? But, they used to treat them as people, really, you know. You didn't think that they were the enemy, or had been the enemy, or anything like that. There's none of that. It's just that they were people that were making these lovely things, you know.
What job did you get when you left school?
Well, when I left school, we went round to different companies, different firms and different trades, to engineering and printing and carpentry and joinery. And I always remember I went into Enderbys at St Ives, which was a printing company. And I was absolutely fascinated. There was an artist who used to draw a poster of people, girls in a field picking fruit, and they would reproduce that. They would break it down and reproduce that, and print it on paper. And I thought that was absolutely fascinating. And that's what I wanted to do. My mother wanted me to be a postman. Always wanted me to be a postman, but I said no, I want to be a printer. So when I left school at 14, I went into the printing industry, and I was trained up, and when I was 18, of course, I had to go in the army. I was called up, but by the time I was 18, I was producing, I was printing. I was running a Furnival direct machine with a girl feeder, and printing 500 sheets an hour, and you single colour, one at a time. You build up a picture of four colours. And then it all stopped. And I had my calling up papers, and I tried to get into the Royal Engineers because I wanted to carry on with my printing. And because you can ordnance survey in the engineers, it was quite a good job, and I could carry on with my trade. Unfortunately, I had to sign on to be a regular to do that. I could have got in if I'd have signed on to be a regular, and I didn't want to do that at the time. So I was drafted into the infantry, went to Colchester.
What date is this?
This is 1950.
Do you know the month?
September 1950. My group number was 5018. But I was in the Beds and Hearts first. I went to Colchester, did my training. And then when the training was over, we passed out. There was a chance to go to Trieste, but they wanted volunteers. I never told my mother I volunteered, but I did. I volunteered. I thought I liked the idea of going to Trieste. So off we went. And I was in the Northamptonshires then, Northamptonshire Regiment. And I had 10 months in Trieste. And that was quite good. That was called a police action. And we used to patrol around and keep order on the borders. And I remember one particular time we was on the range and firing away. And this guy came charging down the bank from the Yugoslav border, running towards us, who were firing at the targets, and the Yugoslavs were firing at him from behind, and the bullets were smashing up all the stones behind him as he was running. The gunfire was following him. We stopped firing because he was running straight at us, and he collapsed near us, in front of us, and all his legs were all bleeding, but that was the stones. He hadn't been hit. It was all the splinters from the stones that had pierced his leg and tore his trousers. He was desperate because he was running towards us. He was firing at the range, you know. So, I mean, he risked his life in that respect, and he got no choice. But that was just one incident.
What was your interpretation as to what had happened there?
Well, he'd obviously escaped because the Yugoslavs used to patrol the borders, and they had dogs, Alsatians, they had tower lookouts, and they were always armed, and they would always be on patrol. And this poor chap must have thought that that was a weak link, thinking that the Yugoslavs wouldn't dream anybody would dare run into a firing range, but he did. And that was the way I interpreted that. He obviously thought that was the place to escape from. But what happened to him after that, I don't know. He was obviously taken to hospital. And then we used to patrol the streets, and we went to Austria and did some training up the mountains, Smelts. And I remember there was a big hotel up there. I think it was called the Winterleuten or something like that, and a ski run and a lake, and we were up there training using live ammunition, obviously training for career. And I remember one chap fell down 200 feet and they couldn't get him back, so they had to come up from the bottom to get him. And I happened to say to one of the officers, you know, about these live ammunition, and he said, "Oh, don't worry about it." He said, "We allow for five people to be killed. Don't worry." So it was really vigilant training, and we got back to Trieste, and then we were drafted to Korea.
Just let me stop you there. Mm-hmm. Which battalion of the North Ents were you with in Trieste?
I think I was the 1st Battalion of the Northamptonshire. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I think it was.
And which company were you in?
I was in A Company there.
Do you remember the platoon?
No. I do. I remember in Korea. I remember the platoons in Korea, but not in Trieste. But
and
that sort of that's a different memories of Trieste, because I've got BHQ guard, that sort of thing in my mind when one of the prisoners escaped one night. My mate took him a cup of cocoa and he didn't come back, and sure enough he'd been hit on the head and the prisoner had escaped, and we found him up the road fighting with the Italians. And that's the sort of memories I got there. And I can't remember what company I was in there now.
What nationality was this prisoner?
He was English. He was a soldier. He was one of the Peg brothers, actually, come from Norwich. And they were always fighting with these locals, you know. They used to be renowned for that, and because he was in there doing his time. And
why were they always fighting with the locals?
Well, I don't know, really. They didn't get on too well with them. The locals resented us being there, really. You know, I mean, Blondie's Bar used to be a favourite haunt of ours, and there was always fights there. And I remember you used to go in there, and you'd take your hat and your belt off, and this large lady would be on, she'd take it, and when you went, she'd give you your hat and belt back, and that'd be yours. She'd know exactly whose was whose. It's incredible, really. Because when you get outside and you'd had a few beers or something like that, rum and coke or whatever you used to drink, you used to get sat upon. And the Peg brothers used to be renowned for their little skirmishes. They used to retaliate. And
were the local people Italians or Yugoslavs?
Well, they were Italians. You're right on the border of Italy and Yugoslavia, and what's the other one?
Austria.
Yeah, you're right on that border, you see, and they couldn't make up their minds who Trieste belonged to, really. But they were Italians who were living there that we came into contact with. I suppose they was a mixed bag, really, wasn't it? You think about it. But we were there as a police action, and just keep law and order a little bit, you know.
Was there much difference between the Italian population and the Yugoslav population?
I think what I remember of it, it was mainly Italian. Yeah, we went to Yugoslavia about 5 years ago on holiday, and I didn't enjoy that holiday at all. I kept remembering what had happened in Trieste, you know, about this poor guy running down that slope. And Pat said to me, "Do you want to go to Trieste, because you're not too far away?" I said, "Not really." I didn't bother with it, you know. I didn't want to go back, which is strange, really, because I thought I would before we went. But when I got to Yugoslavia, I wasn't happy there. I didn't feel as if I was on holiday to relax, you know. I felt as if I'd got some memories there that wouldn't go away. But
did you feel yourself to be in danger when you were in Trieste?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you was always vigilant. You were always making sure you're looking behind your back, you know. Another thing was the weather. I see a bus get blown over, a double-decker bus get blown over and pushed along the street with the borers.